title my talk here in closing, Live Different Together. And I've asked the question this week, does this really matter? Right? It's a 16,000 square foot metal building, a couple million dollars made it look pretty. There's a lot of shortcomings to it. I mean, we have 17 parking spots, you know. How are we going to deal with that? This little postage stamp in this metropolitan area, you can actually look at the fact that there's 350,000 people in poverty and say we help 200 families a year. Does that really matter? And then you start asking the question, do we matter, right? Does what we do matter? J.R. Tolkien wrote a story called Leaf by Niggle about a man named Niggle, which is an old English word which means to tweak or to annoy. Niggle was an average man who was scattered and lazy and distracted. His hobby was one of being a painter, and he was pretty average at that as well. He had a neighbor named Parrish who always interrupted his work, needing help with repairing his house or helping his sick wife. And Niggle just lived this frustrated life constantly, as Tolkien says, swearing under his breath. Does anybody live like that? Swearing under your breath because what you want to build just doesn't seem to happen. And Niggle died and never got his work painted that he spent his lifetime painting. He would try to paint this tree with these leaves. Ironically, Tolkien would say this was actually his autobiography. Can you believe that J.R. Tolkien, who we celebrate today, basically viewed his life as a frustrating niggling, and he didn't really get much done? He always felt like whatever he was doing, it was not enough. Isn't that how we all feel? Whatever we try to do is just not quite right, and we never seem to turn the corner on this thing that we call life. And as beautiful as this building is, believe me, there's 100 things that have to be niggled in this building. We try to hide them from you today, but Jesus has an answer to our question about this in the Lord's Prayer. He says, "Our Father who art in heaven, hallowed be thy name, thy kingdom come." What does that mean? Most people, if you're of the Christian faith, believe in what I call a three-chapter gospel: creation, fall, redemption. We are created by God, we jacked it up, and Jesus came, and if you believe in him, you get to go to heaven when you die. That's a three-chapter gospel. It leaves out, I think, the final chapter, thy kingdom come. That is the chapter of restoration, that Jesus actually wants to restore the world back to the way it was in the creation. And the job of the church is to be that witness and that restoring influence in the culture. And this is what has transformed from a small group of shivering believers in an upper room to actually changing the course of human history. But do we really want God's kingdom to come? Because when God's kingdom comes, it's really different than the world's kingdom. When he reigns, the rules are flipped. The natural order is turned on its head. And the Bible is filled with examples of Jesus doing this. He always says, you heard it's like this, but I'm going to tell you, it's really like this. The inaugural address of Jesus happens in Matthew 5. What would it be like to live under God's kingdom? I've heard a little children's book describe it the best. It's God's people in God's place under God's rule. If we lived like that under God's rule and God's place as God's people, what would it look like? And the reason that blue beautiful Beatitudes is outside this door is because I want that inaugural address of Jesus to be out there. This is how you work in the kingdom. And he says this, "Blessed are the poor in spirit." In another passage, he says, "Blessed are the poor." What's the difference between the poor in spirit and the poor? One has a heart of humility. One has a lack of resources. I think the poor and the poor in spirit are usually kind of one and the same, right? They realize they got to trust God every single day. They are the apple of God's eye. John Calvin said the fundamental three Christian virtues are humility, humility, and humility. It is where we realize who we really are. In the kingdom, if this is to be a kingdom place, then the poor ought to have center stage here. This is why we don't have a staff lounge in the building where if you're a staff member wants to get away and have your lunch away from the people, you can't. We all eat together. And when you sit in that cafe and you look at the wall, you're going to see the artwork of Sherry Allen, a young girl who grew up off of Washington Street over on the Points. Her mom beat her every single day, made her live in a dank basement. So when she saw her mom getting upset, she would stuff crayons in her mouth and go down to that basement, and she would find old books, and she would pull them out, and a light would come through the window and shine on the floor, and she started drawing the lilies on that piece of paper that her mom put out on the front porch. And out of all of that suffering and all of that drama comes this beauty. And her display of paintings over the drinking fountain is called Seeds and Beads. Humble little things, and this beautiful stuff has come out. And you'll see this little pencil sketch on the wall of how she recalls that beam coming through. And she said, I would sing Jesus Loves Me because that was my picture of God. Blessed are the poor. Blessed are those who mourn, it says, for they will be comforted. In other words, happy are the sad. That doesn't sound right, but in God's kingdom, everything's flipped, right? I believe in this context, it's talking about the pain of the oppressed. We live in a world of broken hallelujahs. If you deny the pain in this world, you are living, you're not living in reality. We have 45 armed conflicts in the world right now. Yemen, Syria, Afghanistan. You walk down the back wall, you'll see Leticia has a painting of a little kid huddled up against the wall and these piercing eyes. In all the conversations about the wall, we forget these little children. If you're paying attention, the world's in a rough place. Krista Tippett said in her book, the globe is really a teenager right now. Were the teenage years the healthiest years of your life? I have four teenagers. I can tell you right now, if the globe is a teenager, we got problems. One of my teenagers was telling me about his week. He's like, yeah, I went to class, all that, got to the weekend. I got arrested on Saturday, and I told him, you got to let me out of this jail because I got to get to a job interview at noon. I was like, son, whoa, what did you just say? Oh, Dad, it's nothing. It's a bad parking ticket. And I said, you got arrested, right? And you know what? That wasn't the worst news I got from one of my four teenagers that week. That's what it's like parenting teenagers, right? The globe is a teenager, we're in trouble. And you got to look at the world, you got to stare at it, and you got to mourn. You got to look at the neighborhood, and you got to look at the education system. You got to look at the incarceration system. You got to look at the political system, and you ought to just mourn. And blessed are those who mourn. You know, you're facing reality. In the storage containers out back, we have hundreds of dollars of Kleenex back there. Because in the 8 little counseling rooms scattered throughout this building, we hear the stories of mourning. Trauma. Because when you're truly mourned and you hear the hurts, you are moved to action. Ted Travis said, you can't solve a problem you don't understand, you can't understand from a distance. You got to get there and hear the mourning and you got to feel the tears. Folks, are you doing something to alleviate the mourning in your world? I say true Christian leadership is when you climb up on a bloody cross and you take responsibility for the brokenness in your community. Blessed are those who mourn. Blessed are the meek. Paul says they will inherit the earth. Who are the meek? That word is gentle. That's not what our world seems to celebrate, is it? Because in the kingdom, it's all flipped upside down. I've heard that meekness is not weakness. It's power under control. I don't think that's true. It's not power under control. It's people who actually believe that gentleness is more powerful than the alternative. You actually believe that gentleness is power. It's the idea of breaking of an animal, a rebel spirit submitted to its master, and there's a gentleness. So in the kingdom, there's no strong-arming, yelling, Twitter mobbing, all that kind of stuff. So may this play a place of gentleness, that every single person deserves a kind word every single day. And because you are created in God's image, I respect you, and I will listen to you, and I will love you. And you may have 8 descriptors of how you identify yourself, and whether or not I agree with that's a good thing. Here you're going to find a gentle spirit and a warm hug because that's what the world needs. That is powerful today. Blessed are those who hunger and thirst for righteousness, for they will be filled. Most people think this means blessed are those who behave really well, right? That's not really the idea. The core idea behind righteousness is really the idea of justice. Sir, right living is kind of downriver. That's more of a byproduct. The idea of righteousness is when you bring the world back to the way it's supposed to be, rightly aligned under God's rule. So let's just change that word out, righteousness, and say, blessed are those who hunger and thirst for justice. That makes more sense. We have a series of art paintings in the corridor by Adrienne Norris called Women Behaving Badly. And you've got Sally Ride, the first one, the woman astronaut to space. You have Maria Tallchief, a Native American ballet dancer who took ballet from the rich class down to the middle class. You have those women who led the women's suffrage movement, who put that thing into the legislature for 50 years before women were allowed to vote. And then you have Lima Bowie, the Nobel Prize winner from Liberia. Who was she? In 2003, she got so tired of the civil war in Liberia that she led a delegation of women to Ghana to put pressure on the peace talk process. She got so fed up with the men who were not solving the peace. June and July was dragging on. She took 200 women and sat outside the glass doors, and they sat on the floor, and they said, "We're not moving until we have peace." And the men said, "We're going to jump out the windows if you're not going to let us through the door." And she says, "Then we're going to take all of our clothes off right now." She literally did that. And they freaked out. They had signs that said, "Butchers and murderers of the Liberian people, please stop." And the man running the negotiation says, "The peace hall has been seized by General Lima and her troops." And you know what? A few weeks later, that civil war was over. And you know what she said? "All praise, glory, and honor to God for his unfailing love and favor toward me. She hungered and thirsted after righteousness. May your ambition be one that drives people to hungering and thirsting after justice." And that is our agenda. That is our goal. A world rightly aligned. "Blessed are the merciful, for they will be shown mercy." That is to give refuge and comfort for the helpless, compassion in action. Jesus is saying the people in my kingdom are not takers, they are givers. They're not pretenders, they're practical helpers. They're not condemners, they're mercy givers. We show compassion to people. What is compassion? It is your pain in my heart. Cross Purposes is our nonprofit. Not to help people in poverty, but to help people actually get out of it for good. We have made a promise to our city that if you are living in poverty and you will put forth the blood, sweat, and tears, we will walk with you all the way out. This should be our calling card as Christians. Then he says, "Blessed are the pure in heart, for they will see God." What does it mean to have a pure heart? Does anybody here have a pure heart? I think people that have a pure heart, they love God and they love their neighbor and they do it for the right reasons. We see a picture of this in the scriptures when the rich man walks into the temple and throws his offering into the plate. And then a widow comes and takes her two mites and she throws it into the offering plate. And Jesus says, "Hey, who gave more?" And they all think, of course, the rich man, he gave more. And they're like, no, he gave out of his abundance. She gave her entire savings, her entire paycheck. She dumped her purse out into the thing. She gave everything she had. So here in this building, when you walk into the door and you look to the right of the front door, you'll see a foundation plaque. I want to say this, we have such a phenomenal group of donors in this ministry. Not one single donor asks that their name be put anywhere in this building or a room named after them or their logo on the wall, not one. And the one that's on the wall, underneath that plaque, you'll see a little mason jar there with a few bucks kind of curled up in it and some change at the bottom and a little pledge card sticking out the top, and I've got a little acrylic box there. That was given by 6-year-old Hezekiah Gatia. And if you look at his pledge card, he has his name on there and it says, "How much are you giving as a pledge?" And it says, "The money in the jar." That's a testimony, right? I want thousands of people to see that's how we do it in the kingdom. He gave everything he had in that little mason jar. "Blessed are the peacemakers, for they'll be called the children of God." Man, do we need more of these? In a polarized world, I believe we're reaching dangerous levels. We are sanitizing our lives from anybody who disagrees with us. We're retreating into our bubbles. We're doubling down at blowing our enemy out of the water, and people are being hurt. And if this place is going to be a kingdom place, it's going to be at the place of peacemaking. The reason there are flags hanging over that door are intentional. It says, in a world where everybody is becoming more nationalistic, all nations are welcome here. All people can walk through these doors. You're all on the same plane. If you walk into different rooms, you'll see a different accent in the color of the carpet in different rooms. And in this room, you see all the colors together. That's intentional. And you also notice, folks, there's no flag on this platform. Because when we walk through those doors, we are ascribing to a higher citizenship in a different kingdom that has no real allegiance to any country in this world. And the reason that when you walk into the building that the cafe is the first place you see is this is where peacemaking is going to take place on a neighbor level, where we actually engage and we eat together. We like to say there's no significant change without a significant relationship. And all the isms that isolate people fall away over a meal. On the cross behind me is this beautiful tapestry that Christy Lansen did, We asked all of our families to take a cloth that represents their culture and to turn it in. And Christy took this over the last 3 months to create one cloth. And she called me a month ago and she goes, "This is really, really hard to get all these cloths actually come into something of beauty." And I said, "Welcome to the last 10 years. This is a symbol of our journey together, but is it not beautiful? Why would you not want to partake of the beauty that God has created in all people? Blessed are the peacemakers, the ones who are weaving the cloth back together." And then he lastly says, "Blessed are those who are persecuted because of righteousness, for theirs is the kingdom of heaven." If we took that word righteousness and we said justice, who are persecuted because of justice? When you walk every single art collection in the building outside of the mountains in the prayer room and the quilting wall have humans in them. Why does the quilting wall not have a human in that quilt? Because that quilt is made up by the Washanaji Quilting Guild of all the signals used in the Underground Railroad to help slaves get their freedom. And these were the signs they put up in the windows to see if this was a safe house or not. Why is there no human on that wall? Because those humans were hidden, right? And blessed are those who laid down their lives to get people out of the slavery through the Underground Railroad, and they laid their lives on the line. Our walls are filled with people who suffered for righteousness. And I want to say to those of you who are suffering for righteousness, great is your reward in heaven, Jesus says. The last thing he says here, and in my closing, is this. He says two metaphors. You're the salt and you're the light. Most pastors always preach that the salt is this preserving influence that you put on meat. They didn't have refrigerators back then, blah, blah, blah. But you are the salt of the earth, it says. Not the salt in the refrigerator. Right? Anthony Bradley has a phenomenal article that says it was actually the equivalent today of fertilizer. It should say you are the manure of the earth. Right? It's the idea. What does manure do? It goes to barren places and promotes growth out of decay. So if somebody calls you a piece of, you can say, "Thank you very much. I'm living the kingdom life right here." When you walk up these doors, you'll see the prison art on the walls there. Why do we do the prison art there? You know why? I want to see beauty behind the bars. Look past the bars and see how they interpreted the Good Samaritan passage. We need to bring some fertilizer to that barren place of our country where we only have 4% of the world's population and 25% of the incarcerated population. That's wrong. Right? Let those fathers go free. You are the salt of the earth. You're the manure of the earth. Then he says, you're the light of the world. A town that is built on a hill can't be hidden. You don't put a light under a lamp, put under a bowl. You put on a stand that gives light to everybody. Let your light shine before others so they can see your good deeds and glorify your Father in heaven. Can I say this? Everybody in here can be a light. You may not be able to scale a nonprofit. You may not be able to run an organization. You may feel like you have a very humdrum job. But you know what? The darkness is everywhere, and all you got to do is say, "I'm going to be a light by the grace of God," because living different matters. I have a dream that this will be a place of light, a light of inspiration to a world in darkness, God's people in God's place under God's rule, and may God's kingdom come. So I ask you, are you living different? You say, "Well, I don't know if my difference matters." In the story of Leaf by Nigel, eventually dies, and he goes to heaven, and he's on this train, and he gets off the train. He hops off, and he sees his bike back from on earth with his name on it. He hops on his little bike, and he goes through this green meadow, and all of a sudden he lifts up his eyes, and he falls off his bike. There he sees his tree, the full tree, the tree he tried to paint his entire life, all on display. He sees his tree as he fully imagined it, and he says, "This is a gift." He went on looking at the tree. Listen to what Tolkien says. All the leaves he had ever labored at were there as he had imagined them, rather than as he had made them. And there were others that had only budded in his mind, and many that might have budded if only he had had time. Listen, nothing was written on them. They were just exquisite leaves, yet they were dated as clear as a calendar, Tolkien says. That means every single light that you give in the corner of your world, it is on God's calendar. These are my people, and they are doing this kingdom work. His neighbor eventually joins him. And his neighbor looks at the tree and he goes, but it didn't look like this tree back then. And now it's real. And you see on your little take-home gift there in your that picture frame, no, it was only a glimpse then, said Niggle. But you might have caught the glimpse if you ever had thought it worthwhile to try. I want to encourage you today. If you just love one neighbor, you just light one light, and you ever have just the courage to look beyond it and not shame yourself for what you can't get done, but just go and love one person, you will have then exercised God's kingdom rule in this world. And I trust that today we all got a glimpse of the kingdom of God.